हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Chaitanopanaya, Nyaya Shastra, page 28. Okay. So this is Sutra 116. Comparison is the knowledge of a thing through its similarity to another thing previously well known. Right? So you're going to have something that you know, and then you know another thing through what you previously knew. You don't know this new item, but I can compare it to something that you already know. And in that way, then you get, you know, you're trying to bring about that dishtanta. So, it can be as if you can't find an example, in explaining the thing, you give the example, but they don't understand that, then you can use it at that point, because then you bring it near there. But its main thing is this in the fourth stage, in Upanaya, and the Panchanganyaya, right, the fourth position, is that You've given your examples, so you brought it down to a level of pratyaksha where the person actually can relate to something that they've seen of what you're saying. And then now you say is okay, this first point that I'm making, it's like this point that you just now understood through the example.
So is the middle term connected to the minor term?
Connected
to the major term?
Let's see. It would be something. It would be. What would it be? Means that aspect, but yeah. Somehow, know that I haven't connected the two together.
Me neither. I'm just. Could
be. Could say have. I have the five, and then I'm connecting that with those meanings there, but this one on the major, minor, and that one is slowly.
Because I think there might be different applications of it. So it could be like what you said, but it could also just be that you've given a middle term that isn't familiar with someone, so you give another middle term that they are familiar with.
Yeah, and then like that, or yes, some way, whatever it is you want to establish, you had to give, you've given an example. A doubt will come up because you don't understand the point being made. So I make the same point in a similar kind of example that they are familiar with. And now they understand how the point's being made, or the principle of that point, in the known example, I now say, and like that, or similarly, then there's the one we were talking about.
It seems this is the major thing in teaching, like making the unknown known.
Yes.
Through, like working in their context that they know.
Yes.
So it's a very masculine approach. You have to accommodate them.
You have to accommodate them, because that's the whole point, is that when you're teaching, it's taking that masculine position. You know, so because you have to work on the principle of someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole thing. So everybody has to work on that. So even the Brahman, he's teaching. You may say, oh, but it's prestigious position. But he has to serve by teaching so that the student catches it and learns.
On his terms,
yeah, because otherwise you do it. Means the point is not going to be compromised, but how the person will understand the point depends. Just like I remember seeing this one, I thought it was very, very amusing that someone showed me a math book from Nicaragua, and this math book was this was a long time ago, so this would have been during the time of that, what is that, Jay Zavarga or whatever. There's not a Jay, C-H-E.
Oh, Che Guevara.
Yeah. Che Guevara. Something like that, yeah. So that wallah. So they're all revolutionaries and, you know, everything. It means if you're not blowing something up, you're not doing anything, right? You know,
it's like, Sandinistas.
Yeah, oh, they're Sandinistas. Yeah, so like that. So in it, it had one grenade plus one grenade equals two grenades. You know, and, you know, one machine gun. Yeah, it was like that. And I was just saying, wow. You know, these kids are going to...
Practical application.
Yeah, at least that's like, see, that's crazy.
So in America, we use gummy bears or fingers. You know, if you have one gummy bear, and Sally gives you two more gummy bears, how many gummy bears?
but they didn't
have gummy bears, they had grenades.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is about gummy bears, you wouldn't have any gummy bears.
Because you eat them, right?
Yeah. Means you have one gummy bear, you throw them out, she gives you two more, you throw those in your mouth. How many do you have? None. If you still have three gummy bears, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to grow up to be a banker.
Right.
You know, that.
Well, then you would have four because you charge interest.
And all the kids would bring you their gummy bears so the other kids, bullies, don't take the gummy bears. And then you pay off the bully a gummy bear to keep all those gummy bears, but then you take that back from the other.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure that this is going on.
Sure.
Yes.
Maharaj, if audience doesn't understand logic, can we use some emotional manipulations to force them to do?
Yes, but you're still using a logic. See, you have mechanical logic and you have an emotional logic. Right? So the point is whichever works. So in a general audience, you're generally always going to use the mechanical logic, right? But you can give examples. For the examples, they also don't have to be mechanic. They can be emotional, right? But let's say it's just ladies, you can just use emotional logic and you never actually have to use mechanical logic. You know what I'm saying? Because they can think, their logic works in emotions, while the man's works in, you know, you do this, this happens. You know, it means the external result, not the experience of it. While the women generally tend to go more in the experiential. This situation creates this emotion, that one creates that, and this emotion comes up. If you do this, then it'll expand it. If you don't, then it'll go negative, and it'll go off. Or, you know what I'm saying?
The Monday psychologist, they point out that because the data suggests that men are more interested in things and women are more interested in persons.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because means you can look at it. You're interested in things, so that means the man works to get things. Women are interested in persons. You have the person, they get the things. So who's smarter? You know, that's why it says women are four times more clever than men.
And the funny thing is, hard scientific data they need so much experiments, and it's
because the person includes the thing. Yeah.
Just
recently,
some complaining that they have so many lessons and exams that they don't have time for Java. I talked to you, talked with your classmates, and one can do one contact, and another contact, and then you can share with each other, and you will have time for Java. And he wrote to his groupmates, and all of them are girls. He told, let's do it, and they told, we already do it during the last 3 years.
We've been doing this for the last 3 years. He was the only one that wasn't part of it. That's always funny.
And that's why he always was amazing. How they can do all home tasks in so short time and very and all have excellent marks just because they divide it.
Yeah, yeah. You say, another one, yeah. That's funny. Find out you're the last one. What? Okay. Vritti, according to Nyaya, comparison is the third valid source of experiential knowledge, right? So he's giving, means because he uses the four kinds of knowledge, so then this will be used. So we're using the technique at this point, but the actual thing is we're taking it as part of Anuman. Anuman's the thing, because it has to give the valid. Only when the syllogism has been used properly, then you get the point. So it's not a separate. We would count it as a. It wouldn't be the three main, you know, of Shabda, Anuman, and Pratyaksha. We would take it as it's a sub branch of Anuman, because well, that's where we're going to use it, like that. So any of the ten, that other than these three, the other seven, they would all be sub branches. So the fourth, this one, then has a very major aspect. Right, so it'll be the fourth one after. In other words, of the seven, it's the one that's, you know, has the most important. The other ones occasionally may be used. Does that make sense? But this one you're always going to be used. That's why you see in Prabhupada's purpose, they'll say, thus, therefore, he's using those things. It's either taking it on a step, and a lot of times it's this, just like this, this becomes this.
Example, the dwarf, the moon. You don't know the moon, but you see the moon through the branches of the tree.
Yes. Yeah. So similarly, we don't know God, but we learn through something that we like this, or you know, whatever it is the that's where that similarity comes. The comparison comes in. So the example is given that because you give an example they can relate to, then you compare. That understanding from that example they can relate to. In other words, that samskar, connect that to the point you're trying to make. So in other words, it takes a few steps. You gave the reason, you've made your point, you've given your reason. Then you give an example that they can relate to. They caught it then you don't have to put so much onto the fourth one, because it's basically by doing that, by giving the example, then the fourth one is accomplished. But if not, then you can choose comparison to show that this is what happened. But this kind of knowledge comes when one perceives the similarity between the description of an unfamiliar object and its actual appearance before one's senses. For example, suppose that a trustworthy person has told you that there is such a thing as a crab apple. This is from Sahotamarv. Because otherwise, who talks about crab apples? Only Americans talk about crab apples. You have crab apples? You may have them, but you have another name for them. The name is crab apple. I'm not exactly sure what a crab apple is, but it's very American.
I think they're the, as far as I understand, I could be absolutely wrong. But they're the. There are certain trees where these really small apples grow on that aren't really edible, so they just call them crab apples.
And they feed them to cows and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually they just fall and then the bees come in.
Yeah.
I think they're like super sour and really small.
Yeah. And their kind of inside is that it's a little bit more. They're kind of like Indian apples, more sawdusty, but they're a hard sawdusty.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like it's been sitting outside and got moist and then got solid. You have those kind
of apples? Yeah, we call them wild apples.
Wild apples, yeah. That would be exactly it, sort of wild apples. But, you know, we still have them, but I'm sure in Kazakhstan they bred those out, you know, 10,000 years ago. So, you know, that many. No? Okay.
Small decorative wild apples.
Oh, they use them for decorative. They probably last a long time. You put them on the table.
They don't rot as quickly because they don't have much juice in them.
Yeah. So basically, they're an apple that didn't get any juice, so they didn't swell up and become juicy. They just stayed. It would be like if you took an apple and sucked all its juice out, you'd end up with a little dinky apple, which would technically be a crab apple.
Yeah.
But don't they have, you have them?
Yes, before
Indian.
Maharaj, Indian crab apples then.
we eat a lot, we love it.
Well, they're smaller, the crunchy one, they're called cooking apples also. Crab apples are also cooking apples. In India, they're cooking apples. They call that, they're a little flatter, they're really tight, okay, crunchy, sour, but they can be very juicy. Especially if you get them fresh off the tree.
Right.
I mean, it's the juiciest apple I've ever seen. Yeah.
These are the best ones.
These are the best of the crab apples.
the crab apple
Uttama. But I mean, before, now they get, I don't know where they get the apples from or they've got other trees, but before, if you wanted to eat an apple, then you get these apples. The other apples that they sold as eating apples, no.
Right.
They could cook with them, but don't eat them. Straight, don't eat. Okay, so maybe it's also a wide range. Some are more edible and some are more less.
Yeah, and it would also depend on your own perspective, because weeds just mean something that's you don't want in your garden.
Yeah.
But
anything other than an eggplant bush or a chili bush is a weed.
Right.
So
it could be
originally I'd plant all these decorative plants and all that. I'd gone to the nursery, got them, planted them, and then when the laborers would come in to do weeding, and they'd just pull them out.
Yeah.
And I'd say, what do you do that? He says, it's all weeds. He says, what does it produce? It produces nothing. You know? Okay.
Yeah, so some people, with that in mind, would consider all Indian apples crab apples.
I see.
Yeah,
but
they would only have like the most prestigious, I don't even know what prestigious apples. It's not the easy though. You know, they would only use like the best of the best.
Okay. Yeah. Our side it was Washington apples were the best.
Okay.
Big, huge, very juicy. The red ones. But as kids, if you really needed to, you could eat a crab apple.
Sure.
Though they were great, but it's better than, starving to death before lunch, between breakfast and lunch. I mean, that's a very dangerous thing, how many kids do you actually starve to death in between? Look at the hobbits. They have second breakfast and 11sies, so... it's an important thing to consider. So, crab apples can stand in for 11sies.
Deer stand like
deer.
Oh, the deer. Yeah, yeah. They said the animals really like them.
Somehow, the kids they don't mind eating sour.
Yeah, no, super sour. I mean, they have these. What do they call it? Those. We would call them jawbreakers. I think in England they call them gobstoppers. But I think gobstopper is actually a better name.
Yeah.
Because you put that in their mouth and stop talking. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
just you stop
shut your mouth.
Yeah, so. But super, like demoniacally sour.
Yeah.
Erode the paint off your car sour, that kind of,
Yeah, they have a lot.
Yeah, what is it? If you're walking and you trip and it came out of your mouth and fell on the Brooklyn Bridge and make a hole straight through, like that. And then next when it hit the water, then you just see all these dead fish coming up floating. It's just like, I don't know how their teeth survive, Maybe that's why God made milk teeth, because they eat all these crazy things. Held it on your ties, just figured out. Wow, I thought I was late. I didn't miss anything. Okay, crab apples. Okay. For example, suppose that a trustworthy person has told you that there is such a thing as a crab apple that looks like a regular red apple but is smaller and has a longer stem. One day in the woods, you come upon a tree bearing fruit that you have never seen before, but that reminds you of apples. Then you remember your friend's description of crab apples, and you come to a conclusion that this must be a crab apple tree. Sometimes I like the example of the blue cow better. Because that's what the acharyas use.
Right.
Yeah. and we would have saved 10 minutes.
I guess he figured if he's talking to people in the West, they're not going to understand the blue cow thing.
Well, no, you know the blue cow is something that looks like a cow, that's not a cow. Okay, the crab apple they've seen. Okay.
He caught our attention,
definitely. Definitely. It sparked discussion, you know, it was a lively discussion, I mean, except for Haldadar. Oh, no, Haldadar got involved also. Haldadar says, what do you mean? Those are Indian apples. What are you talking about?
I just figured out there's something different.
They're different. How you figured it out?
The Indian, the ones which I was thinking, are called jujube.
That's what a jujube is. The crab apples and jujube.
No, the Indian ones which look like so-called crab apples, they are called jujube.
Ah.
Real candy
clothes. Yeah, yeah. That's what I said. We had a candy named jujube. Maybe they picked it up from him.
Maybe.
Or them, it's the Chinese apple.
Chinese apple. Yeah, anything weird must be this. You've never been there, so you say it's from China.
It must be from China, yeah.
Yeah, in China they'll say, well, actually, it's an American apple. We got it from there.
Prabhupada said Chinese will eat anything in the sky that is not a kite, or in the earth, it's not a rickshaw, or in the water, I don't know.
A boat. Literally, I mean, it's literal. You don't want to investigate this one. This is one you just take it as fact. Don't do your own separate investigation. Yeah, no, like that. Like I never had the opportunity. They say if you went from Hong Kong, but you went way in Kowloon, all the way deep inside, you do not want to go to the markets. Yeah, it's like freaky. I mean, those are the markets that they say in West at Wuhan where the COVID is supposed to come from. Like that. This source of knowledge, Upamana, is not recognized as valid in many of the other systems of Indian philosophy. The Charvak system of philosophy, for instance, does not accept this as a source of knowledge, because this system maintains the perception as the sole source of valid knowledge. The Buddhist system of philosophy recognizes Upamana as a valid source of knowledge, but regards it as a mere compound of perception and testimony. The Vaisheshika and Shankya systems explain Upamana as simply a form of inference. And the Jain system maintains that it's merely a kind of recognition. The Mamamsa and Vedanta systems agree with Nyaya in considering Upamana as an independent source of knowledge, but they explain it in a different way, which will be discussed in the chapters on Mamsa. So this kind of goes with that chart, this paragraph. Mm-hmm. You can probably put it with that. So that it's because the first one is, yeah, here's, okay. Well, Vritti. Next, two sutras elaborate on the characteristics of Shabda Pramana. Sutra 117. Verbal testimony, shabda, is the instinctive assertion, upadesha, of a reliable person, apta. Riti, His Holiness, Suhoja Swami. Shabda or testimony literally means words. It is the knowledge of objects derived from words or sentences and is, according to Nyaya, the fourth and final source of valid experiential knowledge. Not all verbal knowledge, however, is valid. In Nyaya philosophy, shabda is defined as the statement of an apta, a person who speaks and acts the way he thinks. And that means that the way they speak and act, you can take, that's the area you can take their knowledge from. Right? So in other words, let us say the guy speaks and acts as a devout atheist. So you could take it from him on what are the principles of atheism. But you couldn't take from him what are the principles of theism. He'll have his opinion about theism, but you can't. He's not an opta for theism, right? So you have to know where someone's opta. Like you know, I mentioned before, is that remember they brought in one professional, one of these corporate guys for who was the he would be a self-help guru, but he would teach and go to institutions and give you know, the how they get
motivational speech.
Yeah, motivational speech.
Okay.
And so they brought him in, and so then his area that he did, you know, he was totally into it, did all the different things and that. So you can see he's an opta in that area. But then the thing is, because he knows that and he's an authority, then devotees will start to ask him things outside his area. Then he's just giving his own personal opinion. He's not an opta. Well, you know, how should I apply this in my life? You know, this and that, and I'm doing this. And he'll give his opinion, of course. But he's not the opta for that. And so therefore you have to know, that's why then Gotama is making the point, is that it has to be someone who has a philosophy, you know, and, you know, and lives it. You can explain it, you can live it. You
know? Similarly with some celebrities, people want to know, they take them as an example of their own life. Are they just an actor or singer?
Yeah. Just
should.
Yeah. But I can't remember what it was, maybe in the 90s? There was something coming up, it was some big major national thing in America. You know, big discussion and all that. And in this article, in that, it was quoting from this lady who was the most famous prostitute in San Francisco. She was the biggest name, you know, in the Vedic you have Urvasi and Medaka and all that. She was the biggest in San Francisco. And so the news agency was going to her, and what was her opinion on this topic? You know? Because she's famous and all that, so it's like, you know, so then now you ask about everything, you know? So. Like that. And it was like a really standard, straightforward article, like as if it was, this was like real journalism. And if it is real journalism, then what's going on today? I should get back to asking her rather than ask these politicians. You know.
Politicians.
Huh?
They become politicians.
Oh. Oh. Yeah, especially in Tamil Nadu, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the cutting edge.
Yeah. See, how India is always on the cutting edge. Who speaks and acts the way he thinks. Right, so that's all these three. Speaking, acting, and thinking. Because they may speak one way, but if they think another, but when they're thinking and they're speaking and they're acting, go together. And such a person's mind, action, and speech are in perfect harmony, and he is therefore accepted as an authority. So in other words, body, mind, and words, when they're committed to that. So then, naturally, body, mind, and words, then you can see there would be levels. So therefore, someone is, let's say, an opta on the sensual level, then it just has to be there. Someone's on the the pranamoy platform, on the manamoy, or on vigyan, but anandamoy, that's the one we're looking at. But the point is it has its limit. So those who are liberated, and whatever they speak on, then that will have effect all the way down.
So yesterday he saw the Lord, he saw the material energy, he saw the devotion, he saw the soul.
Yes.
So he will be loved on the highest.
Yes. Yes, so it should be in line with Vyas. So that's why then the other five schools have to be seen in that context. So what of them is valid in the context of Vedanta? That would be what we'd use. You know, just like we're discussing, we started this morning, and then I said, got into our distractions, that the Gotama then is the logic, but his philosophy, that we're not accepting. But his elucidation on how the system of logic works, because that is the system. Just he took that part of Vedanta philosophy and made a whole philosophy about it. You know what I'm saying? Vedanta is complete in itself. But when you take part of it and then try to expand it to make it full, then, you know, it's just like, let's say I have a snack, right? And then I try to make that into a meal. You know? Does that make sense? So the thing is, but if I just have more snacks or varieties of that or more chutneys, it still doesn't make a meal. It's just a very elaborate snack. But they'll try to present it as that, you know, or the atomic theory. The aspect of everything comes from the atoms, yes, that's there, but where do the atoms come from? You know? Does that make sense?
Eternal.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's still, it's because it's energy, it still has to have an energetic. So that's where his will fall apart. So that aspect is there, you know. So we understand that everything's here, it's manifested, and we'll go back to earth. It means the bodies and the forms come from earth, and we'll go back to earth. Air will go to air, water will go to water. You know, and then from there, then a new form of life will come up. And then you know, with time, it'll also then go through the six changes, and then again go back. And that's what is that from? That's what, how's it go? From dust thou...
You came from dust.
Yeah, something like that. Each one has its. There's a. Remember, it's dust thou art. Dust you. It just depends on how old the English was. Mm-hmm. You know, when the Bible was put together.
So, normally we hear the, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk. But it seems here, because we're doing body mind work, so then we should add think the thought.
We should think, yeah, think the think, or think the thought, yeah. When you ever said, talk the talk, think the thought, walk the walk, right. Or think, what is it?
Body's first.
Walk the walk.
Walk the walk, think the thought.
Think the talk? No, think the thought, talk the talk. That's good, we should put that one together. That looks good, that's it. So that's an opta.
Thus thou art, thus returns.
Thus thou art, right? Yeah, thus thou art,
thus. To dust returns.
To dust returns.
Returns.
To dust.
Thus
thou art, thus thou returnest. Though thou in the second one?
To dust. No,
to dust.
Oh, to dust. Returneth. Okay.
Returneth thou, if you want. It's understood.
Okay, it's understood thou. Yes. It means this, the Jaimini, Gautama, Vaisheshika, Patanjali,
Kannada.
They were all disciples of Vyas. So they then, depending on how, means, so they put, they gave, they documented, therefore, a philosophy. Because the thing is if you have the samskar, then you should be able to take Vedanta from Vyas. You know, and of that, then Vaishnava. And then of that, Achintaveda Veda Tattva. Right? But if you can't, then there are, down from that, then you have four schools of Vaishnava philosophy. Right? And then you have Shankara. Right? And then if not, then, you know, Jaimini will be more inclusive, then down from that, then Patanjali, then Shankya, then there'll be, how you say, Kannada, and then Gautama. So at least you're staying within the Vedic fold. The idea is that if you keep some, maintain some connection with the Veda, and have faith in the Veda, and try to live, you know, according to the Veda, then you have a better chance of elevating yourself to the proper understanding than if you're outside the Veda. Does that make sense? So therefore, like the Buddhists, or the Charvaka, all these others, they'll have less of it. Well, Charvaka a little bit, but not much. Here's a little Anamoy kind of do. You know, but those outside, then they don't have the context, so how do you explain to them? Like I remember one devotee was telling me in England, that I gave some example of that, you know, the father, like that, and he said that, you know, and I was explaining how this would generally work. But then he was saying, no, one time I was talking to my kid, he had no experience, he grew up just with his mother and never had a father figure in his life. He could not understand the example. You know, so saying God's the father, so I would, so he just said, he just, it didn't mean anything.
So God walked out on me? He doesn't support me?
Yeah, so it's just, yeah, you get that. Yes.
Also, the perspective of seeing the six schools is, as Prabhupada said, Jnanamay level is looking, thinking, feeling and willing. Basically, mind, intelligence and ego is added there. So, the first three is more involved in that. Intelligence is the prominent aspect to discriminate between matter and spirit.
Okay.
And then with Patanjali and Jaimini, then you add in more the aspect of Paramatma into the picture. You're kind of forming a bridge between Jnana and Vijnanamaya. And then only in the Vaishnavas or only in the Vedanta, when you are actually established on Vijnanamaya position, and then once you practice it as bhakti, then it can go to Anandamaya.
And also with yoga it comes to the question of control of the mind, because some people before that they don't really deal with the mind so much. They're on the level of intelligence, they just, just by reasoning, you analyze, and what do you get about the mind?
So yeah, the mind's already controlled.
It's more dynamic, like, you know, than next.
So then the first three would be using intellect, but what would be the level of consciousness?
It is all Manomaya, Maharaj.
It's all Manomaya, okay.
Because they're all accepting Veda, they're following, because the Manomaya Purusha is defined as
okay.
The Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva, and then the Torso is the Brahmanas. So then it attains its fullness in Jaiminis, because
okay.
The action is what emphasized by
okay.
Jaimini, which is the Brahmana, basically.
So and then technically only Vedanta actually deals with Vijnanamaya.
Vijnanamaya.
But then it's just a matter of that Vijnanamaya is on the material platform or whether it's on the spiritual.
Yes.
So then the impersonalists would be the highest of the materialists.
Yes.
We'll call them transcendentalists, but technically it means mundane consciousness. But they're not Kauris. Okay, and then the Vaishnavas would be there. And then of that, then how far within the five schools then?
Because Vijnanamaya starts with attempting to understand the inner meaning. And
Vijnana.
Vijnana. And then finally, realizing the inner meaning of the scriptures is the source of it. Soul is the basis.
Okay.
Sometimes these six schools are in Jaya Prasthana.
Are they?
In Jaya Prasthana, like I mean, you have Sri Prasthana, Shruti Prasthana, Smriti Prasthana, and Jaya Prasthana. These six schools, are they all in Jaya Prasthana or only Vedanta?
All fall in Jaya Prasthana. Jaya Prasthana is basically that you're analyzing and the whole aspect of anvikshiti, you know. All of them are analyzing and doing this. But Vedanta is the only the philosophy on its own. The others don't have a comprehensive philosophy to explain the entire range of Vedas. They only accept some and don't accept the other aspects of Vedas, so they're not comprehensive on their own.
Is that because they're dealing more with the external, what you're viewing, either working with it, you know, analyzing it in the first three, you know, analyzing it just by logical, by atoms or by 24 elements. And yoga, then you have that, but we would say controlling the mind and all that, but you're introducing then Paramatma. So then you're starting to get the idea going up, then higher up, then karma mimamsa, then you're dealing with the karma. they're dealing in that, but there is the idea of Paramatma.
Because the division on that sense, Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya, is you're dividing the whole body of knowledge as Shruti, Smriti and Nyaya.
Mm-hmm.
So though all six schools are dealing with Nyaya, but it's only the Vedantic one which are addressing the whole body of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Others don't address the whole body of knowledge. So. And in fact, in the Vedanta, then already of whatever is explained in Nyaya and Mimamsa is always quoted. So it is.
Mm-hmm.
A scholar should not appreciate it.
They scholars.
Their scholars in the other schools may not appreciate, but
yeah,
that is a fact.
You can't necessarily please everybody. So it's a matter of who's worth pleasing. So in other words, you try to please the optas. You know, why worry with anybody else? Because they can't be pleased anyway.
In fact, this, the books of the six schools, they are written in Vedic or Alaric or something?
Vedic would only be the Vedas themselves. Yeah. It's when you talk Sanskrit, when you write Sanskrit, you know, compose, that's always in classical. Like that. Veda is itself just that. The Vedas themselves are in Vedic Sanskrit. So, on the air?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's full almost.
Okay.
Wondering, okay, Vedanta deals with the whole range of the Vedas, and Mimamsa also is broad range.
Well, you could say is that as far as the verses go, Vedanta and Mimamsa will deal with all verses. But it's not that's only the verses themselves. While the other four schools, they'll only use those verses that support their philosophy. But, in any case, whatever their philosophy is, it's only partial. Compared, so it means, in other words, each one, as you go up, it's a little bigger. It means, I think you're explaining or something, that you have Nyaya and Vaisheshika. They're kind of one group.
Yeah.
So Vaisheshika is a further development. You know, and then you have Shankhya, and then you have Yoga. So Yoga is a further development. You know, then you have Mimamsa, you know, which will be Purva, and then you have Uttara, which is a further understanding. Like that. So all of them will be based back onto Shruti, but they'll only accept those aspects of Shruti that is there. So then, but they'll also have their logic into these things. I'm sure they'll quote back to Veda. I'm not sure if it's Gautama, but they'll quote back. So then they'll use Veda or Shruti as evidence. But the point is their you know, dealings and all that will be more through a logical presentation. And so we see Vedanta Sutra, which is, you could say, is the core aspect of Nyaya Prashtam, that deals with all six schools. And that shows them in the context of the Vaishnava, you know, by removing the anomalies that they compound. Such a person's mind, action, and speech are in perfect harmony, is therefore accepted as an authority. Thus, his verbal and written statement is considered to be a valid source of knowledge. The Veda is considered to be the expression of certain venerable optas, great sages, who realized the truth within and who transmitted their experiences into words. The validity of the Veda is derived from the authority of these optas. So, now, in this, as you have, because the Vedic literature is very broad, so Shruti, the Shruti is a Shruti. In it, it is giving example of optas speaking, but it's not because the optas are speaking that it gives authority to the Veda. The Veda is the authority, and it's quote, and it's giving, you know, these telling these different examples and stories of these great optas. Now the Smriti, that means optas who have studied the Veda and their understanding of this and their explanation. That would be the smriti. Does that make sense? But again, it's documented by Vyasadeva. Right? But within it, you'll see is all these histories of these different personalities then speaking all these, you know, revelations.
Also, this point of the validity of the Veda is derived from the authority of these Aptas. This point is stressed in Chaitanya Charitamrita by saying, when I think the discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the Veda becomes useless when the speakers are interpreting them according to their own understanding.
The authority is lost.
The authority of the Vedas is lost. So this is derived from the authority of these Aptas. Means as much as the Aptas are free from the four defects, then the authority of Veda is passing through them.
Okay. But then the Aptas that you were talking about, Chaitanya was making that point.
Yes.
Aptas. Yes, so then the ones that are mentioned, then that is given in its proper. So the Veda tells a story about, you know, the demigods, but it's in the context of their relationship with the Lord and how everything's coming. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's like I think you have it, I think it's Chandogya or something, that someone's asking about the Absolute. It was in Vedanta Sutra. And Indra says you have to worship Indra. But he wasn't meaning himself. He was meaning the person by whose power I am Indra. Because the Indra-ness of me is coming from someone else.
Yeah. So the parampara system basically is
the opposite.
Is the key.
So then our list is the, that's where you hear it.
Which is why at that point, whatever Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was speaking made no sense to Lord Chaitanya. He said, no, I understand Vedanta, I just don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
he was speaking on Vedanta, but since it wasn't connected through that, there was no potency coming in.
Sure. That's a real. And he's the biggest scholar in India.
Yeah.
And then the guy says, no, I understand Vedanta.
That's quite clear.
Yeah,
that's
a real.
Such
a, it's a subtle, like Krishna told Arjuna. You know, those who are wise don't speak the way about this topic.
While speaking learned words.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would then point out that he is therefore.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. In the same way as that Lord Chaitanya, the same. Flavor is telling Sarvabhauma that he's an Indian.
And he took it very well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when someone says something so straight and all that, it's just, it's not a personal opinion, it's not this and that. You know, it's like you say in the morning about just the nature of the duty. You know, it's just like, I think you have that one story, I think Alexander captured in a battle, and he captured the king, Indian king. And then when he was brought before him, you know, by his men, then he asked him, so how should I deal with you? You know, now that I've captured and defeated, he says, like a king. Because he's a king, he's a kshatriya. So you have to deal with me as a kshatriya. You know, I may be defeated, but I'm still a kshatriya. And so Alexander did. So same way as that, you know, here in Sarvabhauma, the greatest scholar, then this person is just speaking very straightforward on that scholarly platform. You just have to, what can you say? You're going to say something?
No. He has a problem with Alexander capturing the Indian king.
Huh? Yeah, king, who's the king?
Maybe it was before, maybe it was on their way to India. But the point was, is the guy was just saying, I'm a king, so you should deal with me as a king.
Yeah, I also read this.
Yeah, because the point is also in India, you catch another, you deal with him like that. Because it's about, there's a battle, and there's a discipline. You defeated him, then it doesn't mean he doesn't remain the way he is. You know, it's a uncultured thing that then you deal badly.
It was very close because they did not surrender.
Yeah. Yeah, just that's yeah, so someone with those qualities can relate to it. Like you had, I think it was Mushashi. You know Mushashi?
Yeah.
He was considered the greatest swordsman in the, you know, possibly in Japanese history. He was in the 1700s. Is that Book of Five Rings? No? Okay. So, at one battle, then there's something going on and he meets this other, you know, two opposing sides. But each can tell from the other just about, you know, how they do everything, just what level they are. Mm-hmm. And each one respects the other because of such high level. And then they're discussing, it's too bad that we, you know, hadn't met earlier, or too bad that, you know, we only meet now that we're enemies and all that. And then after having this discussion, then they have the standoff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, after, you know, Mushashi, of course, has to be successful. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it. And so afterwards, then there's respect for the person. You know, the person says, yeah, punk, you know, like that, no, no respect. But that's who hears that, is somebody who's two very great warriors, and they have that respect. And, you know, whoever's, he would then, you know, see to that, you know, his proper burial, he'll come every year and offer respects. And
similarly, Indra and Vipassana, they had a very nice conversation.
Yeah.
and Indra was very impressed.
Yeah, because he was speaking, Vipassana was speaking from a higher platform. Okay. The Veda is considered to be the expression of certain venerable aptas, great sages who realized the truth within and who transmitted their experiences into words. The validity of the Veda is derived from the authority of these aptas. It's just the wording. Validity means we get what the Veda is saying from these persons, but the Veda being Krishna is independent. Just like Krishna and his energy, they're not different, but still he's independent. You can distinguish him from his energy. So his form is manifested from his internal potency. But you can still tell the difference between him and his internal potency. So there'll be that simultaneous one, because otherwise you want to be very careful. It's that the personality is there for them. The Veda, I would say, is that kind of thing is what they're taking.
Yeah.
You know, the Veda, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, the Veda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to understand that the Veda is independent.
Yeah.
You know, and then its authority is expressed. Because in other words, the Veda is independent, but it's expressed through the office. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody speaking. There's always some personality talking, you know, like that. You know, like that Taittiriya Upanishad, then Bhrigu is speaking to Varuna, like that. Bhrigu Vaivadarihi, like that. So then he's speaking to him. So the whole knowledge is being discussed there. You know, all these different Pancharatas, and somebody's discussing, I think Narada Pancharata, Shiva and Narada Muni are discussing, you know, Lakshmi, it's Lakshmi and Indra.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always like that. Or in the Bhagavatam, you have that section on Pancharatra, that's Krishna and Uddhava. So there's always a discussion. So the validity of the Veda is it's an authority, but it expresses that through the devotees.
I think there was another writing by Sukhamudra, actually, where he was explaining that it is not that the validity of the Veda depends on being confirmed by the sages. Rather, the sages confirm their validity by confirming the Veda.
It is, yes, yes. Yes, yes. Well, it's just that here, this probably because we're taking this and this thing, it may have already been explained. But I'm only bringing it up in the context of.
Also, Maharaj still didn't enter into the full explanation about the transcendental and he gives segregations later.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm just bringing it up just because of the contemporary. I mean, the temporary nature of contemporary issues.
Yes.
Right? Because contemporary means it's temporary. Or let's say modern. Modern mentions that. Modern means it's not Vedic. So therefore, modern means what's happening now, the change, the transformation, what's going on today. But it's called modern because you're not seeing it in the context of the Vedas. If you saw it in the Vedas, it's ancient, because what's going on today is always going on. It's the way the modes work. You know, four kinds of destruction are always going on. It's not that it's different.
I was just thinking that that might not be the right word, because con temporary means con is not, but if we put a T in there, it's contemptuary, then it's contemptuous. So that would make more sense. But you know, they like to give words that will make
yes, and then it's completely been shifted from its. Yeah, but it's been shifted from its original meaning, so contemporary. So we're speaking contemporary.
Yeah. Yes,
I mean, yeah, so we're contemporary. Well, they're modern.
Possibly
postmodern. Or postmodern.
So far beyond modern that you don't even recognize.
Yeah, in other words, the modern, at least there was some relationship. It's not the Veda like this, and now it's not. It's like a complete derivative, you know, where you're trading on the market, and you know, dust that fell off the potatoes.
It's the pure Veda, but it can be mixed with some other things. So, but
yeah.
The pure Veda can be mixed.
We kept the wrapper.
Pure cow milk.
Sorry?
Pure cow's milk.
Pure cow's milk.
Cow is always pure. So.
Oh, yeah. Pure cow.
Pure cow.
Yeah, so that's silk. 100% pure silk. Because they used, when they manufactured, they took 100% pure silk and mixed that with the cotton. They didn't mix mixed silk with the cotton. With pure silk, they mixed with the cotton.
We use 100% pure silk.
We do.
To mix with other.
Yeah. I was quite shocked when I figured that out.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada.